Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name's Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, April 15th. This is the 7 a.m. meeting in Eastern Time. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We'll be reading page 31, second paragraph, starting with "Despite all we can say," and then we're going through one paragraph and long enough to drink like other people. Today's readers are, we have Marge O. will be doing the 12 steps. Penny C. will be doing our 12 traditions. Judith S. P. will be the first reader of our text, and Sally A. will be closing us out. We have our newcomer greeter, Reva P., our host for the second hour, Pete B., and doing announcements will be Kathy S. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April 14th, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23366, and the 10 a.m. meeting is 23367. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I'll now ask Marge O. to read the 12 steps. Marge, come on in.
Good morning, Marge O., currently in York, Maine, but from Boston, Massachusetts area. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our past. I pass.
Thanks so much, Marge O. So Sally A., would you come on in and read the 12 steps, or I'm sorry, 12 traditions for us?
Excuse me, I think that Penny C. is supposed to do that.
Sorry, yes, Penny, you are absolutely right. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Penny C., come on in.
Okay, I'm Penny C., I'm recovered compulsive overeater from the Boston area, and these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our Leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thanks so much, Penny C. And sorry, Sally A, I probably startled you. So thanks, Penny C. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Let me just ask if everyone can try and check mute on their phone, make sure you are muted. Thanks so much. So give us a nice quiet meeting. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. So today we're going to be reading page 31, second paragraph. Despite all we can say, through the end of that paragraph, going to and long enough to drink like other people. So I'd like to ask Judith SP to get us started with reading and sharing.
Hi, Barbara. Thank you, and welcome to the newcomers. I'm grateful everyone's here. My name is Judith SP. I live in Maryland, and here we go. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe that they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to them. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. So here we are in more about alcoholism, and because I have in my past before coming into these rooms had such a thick brain and a feeling of I know it all, even though I know now I know nothing, I was in denial. If I read this first sentence, if there was a way in which I could grasp it, despite all we can say, or because of all we say, many who are real compulsive eaters are going to believe they are in that class. And that class is what we read about and talked about in the paragraph before. But I didn't. I didn't accept that I had a major problem. And now I realize part, a big, big part of that reason is I had no clue. I had no clue that when I was young and I went to the food, that there were other choices. I don't know as a little kid if I could have said, Mom, Dad, Grandma, I'm scared. Or I don't like the way I'm being treated, or whatever. But as time went on, I continued to not know how to live my life in an honest, open, and willing way. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they would try to prove themselves exceptions. I always tried to put myself as, well, I'm unique, you know? I'm that quirky one. Bill said at the beginning of his story, when he drank, he told Lois he was really able to create and see everything wonderful. You know, I used food and I used self-delusion to give me the wherewithal to think that I knew how to get myself out of the state of misery. I could never take an about face. I kept trying to go forward and kept tripping over my own feet. And it's very, very, it's very comforting to know that my forefathers and mothers all struggled with the same denial, the same inability. Maybe because, as with myself, I didn't know that I had a serious problem. And there was a solution, and the solution was spiritual, that God is my answer, and God is my strength and my lead. I can get to the point where I can take these steps and do what is needed to recover so I can continue to have spiritual activity after activity to strengthen my spiritual fitness. And with that, I pass, and thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Judith S.P., for getting us started. Judith is from Maryland. So now we're going to go ahead and proceed with readers. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Sally A.
Sally.
Melissa
C. Shannon
C. Reva P. For Sally and Melissa and Reva. There were a few people who came in. It was that Elaine.
Anna C.
Anna
Lisa C.
Liz E. UK.
Lisa C. Liz E. Let me tell you who I have because I know I'm missing some people. Sally A. Melissa C. Reva P. Elaine S. Anna C, Lisa C, Liz E. Who did I miss?
Anna C.
I heard Lynn.
Jana, not Anna.
And, okay, Jana. Jana, is that right?
Shanna, S-H. Tennessee.
Jana, gotcha. Jana, okay. Thanks, Jana, I've got you. And I've got Lynn at the end. I don't have an initial, but that's okay. Who, did I miss someone else?
Jen A, Colorado.
C-H. Okay, I've got Roy and somebody in Colorado.
Jen A.
Got you, Jen. And somebody H.
Tina H, New Jersey. Tina H, New
Tina?
Jersey.
Tina or Gina? Tina?
Tina, T with a T.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, we're going to stop right there. So I will tell you quickly who we have, and then we'll get started. Sally A, Melissa C, Reva P, Elaine S, Anna C, Lisa C, Liz E, Lynn, Roy C, Jen A, Tina H. So Sally, get us started, and you'll be followed by Melissa C.
Thank you, Barbara. Sally A. in New York. Thank you, Judith, for that wonderful lead. And yes, Barbara, I was like a deer in the headlights when you said those words. Sally, would you like to read the 12 traditions? That was funny. So this is a great paragraph for me. This is, as the other ones previous to this, this is step one. For a long time, I was focused on step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. But the truth of the matter was, I was always at step one, because I honestly did not believe I was powerless. I always believed that I had a lot of self-discipline and that I had a lot of drive to do what I wanted to do, and that, of course, I would go to God to help me. But admitting that I was powerless went against everything I had studied. I've read so many books on being enough, but the truth was, I was not enough. This is something that for so many years of my life, it was like a Rubik's Cube trying to, and I never could do those Rubik's Cubes. I've seen these brilliant people who could, like, you know, turn the little cubes and get them to all the right colors. But for me, it was constantly, if I could just figure out what is the problem. And never did I really understand until I read these 164 pages. When it says here, despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics, I am a real compulsive because it centers in my mind first, obsessive because I obsess over how much can I get and not look abnormal. The real alcoholic, me, I am the real McCoy. They try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule. Oh my goodness, I have used every form of experimentation. I could list 20 things that I have tried to get the fat off, as my sister Martha would say, and it just didn't work. I could not moderate. I had to work the steps to cleanse my mind, to brain flush, and develop a relationship with my higher power, my God, that would heal me, that would direct me. As I listen closely, should I eat this? Should I not eat this? And I'm really trying to work on this. This mother, may I? Father, may I? Is this the right thing? Is this the wrong thing? And truly stay hand in hand walking with my God. No, I know I cannot control. And the end of this, to drink like other people. Okay, uncle, I surrender. The white flag is up. I will never eat like other people apart from walking with my higher power. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks, Barbara.
Great. Thanks, Sally. Glad I didn't give you a heart attack this morning. Melissa C., you are up, followed by Reva P.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, Barbara. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm in New York. And, you know, I think about all the forms, you know, of self-deception. I wanted to be like other people. And, you know, I think every time I lost weight, I really believed that I was going to keep it off, that somehow achieving a healthy body weight was going to be like the magic cure-all. And now I could just, since I looked like other people, I could act like other people. And, you know, one of the most, for me, painful experiences or illustrations that I have of this was, you know, being like a newly married bride. You know, 29 years ago, going on my honeymoon, really super happy. I was thin. I was in a normal size body. I was, you know, on my honeymoon. I thought I could do what other people did. And I opened up the, and I had been abstinent at that point, not recovered, you know, no recovery, but just abstinent. And I like unleashed the monster. I could not, you know, rein it back in. And, you know, the other ways when I think about being able to eat like other people. You know, thankfully, right, I get to go places. I go like on vacations, or I go to events, catered events and places. And, you know, the truth is I cannot eat like other people. And there used to be this part of me that felt very sad about no longer being able to be spontaneous. And I hated that, because I thought, I like to think about myself as, you know, this free spirit that could just sort of pick up and go and not be worried about what I was eating. But the truth is that I was never a free spirit where it came to food. And when I eat, for me, compulsive eating is really closely tied to impulsive eating. If I eat impulsively the way normal people do, without a plan, without, you know, just like willy-nilly, just going on what I think is my hunger, I trigger the allergy. That is my truth, that it's not just alcoholic foods, but it's alcoholic food behaviors for me. And I have to know that and embrace it. I was never free where food was concerned when I ate spontaneously, because food was my master as soon as I did that. And, you know, and so I embrace this. Why is it so important that I embrace it? So that I am free and hungry to do the rest of the work of the steps, which is about forming a relationship with God, where today I am really happy that I am not like other people. It is okay. I'm exactly as my Creator made me. Thanks for that. I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa C. from New York. Reva P., you're up, and you'll be followed by Elaine F.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. And what's striking me this morning are the words self-deception and experimentation. Self-deception, the act of knowingly or unknowingly hiding the truth from myself, or maintaining a false belief to evade an unpleasant reality. So before I came into program, how was I self-deceiving? It was like Groundhog Day. It was like that movie. Every morning I woke up and said, today's going to be different. And then I would diet all day long. And then I would come home from work, shut the door, and binge thousands and thousands and thousands of calories. And the next morning I'd wake up and tell myself, that's not going to happen. So denying the truth, denying the evidence that was accumulating every single day. And then when I came into program, I had gotten some mixed messages from program and also doctors outside the program, and programs that told me I could just have a moderate amount of anything. So I tried it, and we're going to read later on, you know, I self-diagnosed only by trying it. It didn't matter what anybody said. It didn't matter what the book said. I proved to myself by trying it that I had a physical allergy, characterized that by that phenomenon of craving. And that was pretty clear. But then how else did I deceive myself? It wasn't just about the physical allergy. For me, this chapter is so powerful because it talks about people who were in AA, who knew about the physical allergy and the mental twist, who knew that the steps were the solution, and they still picked up. So when I came into program, I deceived myself, not just with the food that I had to keep trying and trying till I realized this is the physical allergy, but things like the manifestations of self, the reason why I really need power, because I can't differentiate the true from the false. If I just had a physical allergy, I would stay away from the food. But I have a second issue that my mind tells me I don't have the physical allergy. And in order to put light on that lie, only my higher power, only the spiritual awakening and that power can shed light on differentiating the true from the false. So yeah, I tell myself, oh, I'm not resentful. Oh, I'm not scared. And then sooner or later, I pick up for that effect, because that's how I have try to solve that issue as opposed to going to a source and a higher power that erases the need to pick up because it addresses the deeper aspect of my disease. And I'm just so grateful for this program. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Reva P. from Toronto. And Elaine S., you'll be followed by Shanna C. I hope I got your name right. Let me also just repeat where we are for those who've joined us. We're on page 31, the second paragraph, despite all we can say, through one paragraph ending with, and long enough to drink like other people. Did I hear an Elaine S.? I wonder if that might have been Lynn up in the top group, too. All right, well, let's go to Shanna C. I may have gotten that wrong. Let's go to Shanna C. And Lynn, I do have you on the list, so if that was you, you'll come up. Shanna, you come on in, and you'll be followed by Lisa C.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Currently in Jacksonville, Florida. It's through God's grace and mercy and people who are armed with the facts about themselves that shared the solution with me, the problem and the solution with me, and the gift of desperation that came from the horrible pain of this disease that I'm abstinent today and recovered. And it's only through that. You know, I am so grateful that they talk about the real alcoholic, the real compulsive overeater. They're not going to believe they're in that class. Well, my problem is, I did the best I could with the information I had at the time and the lack of power that I had. I had the best. No, I didn't want to blow myself up and blow my life up and destroy relationships and get to the point where I was suicidal. That was not my intention. The problem is this thing gets a hold of my brain and it gets a hold of my body. And I really want to, you know, that loneliness that grips people like us, you know, that talks about the, you know, we will know loneliness as such few do. We'll be at the jumping off place. We'll wish for the end. That's later on in the book. You know, wanting to be like other people, wanting desperately to connect with other people, but not knowing how. And then when not knowing how and feeling perceived rejection, food becomes the great comforter. And when it stops working, it's like, what do I do? And, you know, a real compulsive overeater is going to understand not only, you know, when I eat certain foods or whatever, I can't stop. And I can't remember that I can't eat those things. See, my problem is I forget to remember. That's part of the mental aspect of this is I want to remember. But I can't remember because I keep forgetting to remember because I have no power left to my own devices and my own mind just goes back to the sense of ease and comfort that it once comes from taking a few bites, thinking that I can control it. But so grateful that I get to be reminded that that is not true for me. I am a real compulsive overeater and there is a real solution. And, you know, I could go on and on about all the times I've tried to convince myself that I was normal. And, you know, if I knew I was a compulsive overeater and was just trying to will my way through it, then that would be one thing. But, you know, even when I didn't know I had a problem and everything, I had no way of accessing real power without these steps. And I'm so grateful for that window of opportunity that happened where a power greater than me knew what I needed more than I did. And I got led to you guys. And today I've gone through, you know, it talks about how joy of living we really do. Yes, thank you. Joy of living we really do have even under great pressure and difficulty. That has been the case for me this past year. And, you know, the God of my understanding has kept me safe and protected. And today I'm abstinent through it all, and that's a miracle for me. That's all I have. Thanks for letting me share and everybody being of service this morning.
Well, thanks, Shanna C. from Tennessee. Lisa C., you're up, and you'll be followed by Liz E.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. I am a compulsive overeater from New Jersey, but currently away on vacation. And really, really grateful that I can tune in. I wasn't able to on the first day, and I decided that I needed to pay the money to be able to connect because I need the meeting and I need to connect with fellows. I love this chapter. It's exactly where I am right now, working step one again. But I think in this paragraph, what I see really standing out to me is just how, you know, self-deception is standing out as this, like, things are not what they appear to be. Like, I am very, very, like, taken by that notion that, like, what I see on the surface is really not what's truly there. And that is true in all situations, you know. It's like that contempt prior to investigation kind of concept that I think really is part of the disease for me. Because I appeared normal for most of my life. I was a very skinny little kid, but I could eat an entire pizza pie on my own in one sitting. I could do that when I was like 8. That's not normal. And I think that, the fact that I could remain like someone who appeared skinny. And then, of course, you know, it's like the commentary of family, right? Where does she put it all? Oh my God, look at her go. And it's like, it was comical, but it wasn't. It was torture. It was pain. And it was a way to kind of block my connection to God that was always trying to break through, even when I was younger. And I really love this part here. If anyone who's showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. That is the embodiment of attraction rather than promotion that this book continuously shows me, which is so valuable. There's no shame. And that is the beautiful thing that God and fellows have shown me with relapse, the essential relapse that I have experienced, which is that there's no shame in it. I have a disease. I stopped taking my medicine. I got sick. Done. There's no shame. It's not a moral failure. So if you have relapsed, if you are someone who finds yourself back at step one a lot, or have found yourself back at step one a lot, maybe shame is the piece that needs to be lifted. And I'll just share that if that's helpful to anybody, because I know it was really helpful to me. It is not a moral failure. You still belong here. You're just as valuable as everybody else. And I love that also. There is no pressure. There's no pressure. Our hats are off to him. Like, come in, give it a try. Maybe it doesn't work for you. Maybe you find another way out. Wonderful. I know for me, I am a volume eater. I'm a real compulsive overeater. I desperately need this medicine, and I'm so grateful that I could be here to take my dose today, which started 6 a.m. with prayer and meditation, and just to work these steps alongside of you all. And I'm so grateful to everyone who makes this meeting happen and shares, and for all the experience, strength, and hope. Thank you. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Lisa C. from New Jersey and on vacation, willing to go to any lengths. Liz E., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Lynn.
Good morning. Good afternoon. My name is Liz E. for Elegant in Bristol, Southwest England. Thank you for hearing me today. I'm a very slow learner. I need things to be repeated and repeated and described in lots and lots of different ways and broken down. And, you know, it's a relief that I can understand who I am today. But by every form of self-deception and experimentation, you know, I've done all of it. I've done all the diets, I've done all the books, I've done the acupuncture, I've done homeopathy, I've done, you know, going to dietitians, I've done everything, absolutely everything. I could not control my eating. That is it. But I've also learned since I've worked hard over the years that it isn't just about my eating, it's about my emotions. And I'm really struggling with that currently, and the overwhelm of some challenging situations in my life. But every day I get up, I work the program, I contact my sponsor. We talk about a bit in the book. I take action. But I have to communicate with other fellows because this is a we program. And the most important connection is God and higher power. And I have to let go. And I have been so resistant to doing that because abstinence for me is also about emotional sobriety. And I have not been very good at controlling my emotions in the last few days at all. And I need to do more work on that today because that will lead to eating. So heaven knows we've tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Yes, like others have said, I've lost the weight. I bought those beautiful dresses, gone to the wedding, the party. And, you know, it was only 4 or 5 weeks later. I can't get the dress on again. So I've got a brand new dress virtually sitting in my wardrobe. But today that's different. If you're feeling upset, worried, just do *1. I didn't know what I wanted to share. I didn't want to share, but I know I have to share because that's my medicine, is I have to share at least once a week. So I'm available for sponsor. Give me a call. Lots of love. Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks so much, Lizzie from the UK. And Lynn, I believe it's Lynn S. You'll be followed by Roy C.
Hi, good morning. Yes, it is Lynn S. And somebody used the term yesterday about being a voice wrangler, and I love that. It's very difficult, I know. Anyway, good morning, Barbara. Good morning, Vision. My name is Lynn S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. And the minute this paragraph was read, I got a vision. And it was me and the one time that I was able to eat like a lady. And it just sprang into mind, and I had just lost, I was 16, I had just lost my very first 100 pounds, and I was sitting there in, you know, the thin clothes, I'll never forget it, a crisp white shirt and black, beautiful black pants with a belt, no less, and I was sitting in the chair in the living room, and I had a cup of tea, and I had a lovely plate beside me with two cookies. And I was sitting there, and my dad came home from work, and he walked up the stairs, and he looked at me, and he said, "What are you doing?" Because he had lived through this miracle of seeing his daughter, who struggled with her weight her whole life, eat differently and lose 100 pounds. And I said, "It's okay. I'm just having a cup of tea and a cookie. It's okay. I, and I really, that vision, like, it just was, I was all dressed up and I was eating a cookie with a cup of tea like a lady. And that was the very first time and the very last time in my whole life that has ever happened. And of course, you know, it led to gaining all the weight back. It led to 20 more years of up and down and up and down and up and down. But what also came to me when I was thinking about this is when it talks about to drink like other people and that desire to eat like other people, there have been 3 times in recovery in program where I have thrown an absolute hissy fit that I could not eat like other people. And one was when I was in South Africa, and one was when I was in Arizona, and the other one was in France. And all 3 times I got so mad, especially in South Africa, working with Habitat for Humanity, and everybody was having a barbecue to celebrate the building of this house we'd done for somebody. And I couldn't, because it was 3 o'clock and I couldn't wait for lunch that long, and it was too early for dinner, and I was so furious that I could not participate in something like this. Why can't I just eat like a normal person? And it took me a good... Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Because I can't, because I'm a compulsive overeater, but the life I've been given is so much better. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Lynn S. And Roy C., you are up. You'll be followed by Jen A.
Good morning. This is Roy C. from Southern New Jersey. I'm a compulsive overeater. And this paragraph reminded me of an experience I had just last night. I was sitting at a table at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and the gentleman next to me was about my age, and is about my age, and he sitting there in idle conversation, and he talked about what he had to eat, and although the snacks that were available at that meeting were delicious looking. And he said that he liked them. He had enough because he had eaten earlier that day and had some good food, and he didn't feel like having it. And he had other treats strewn out in front of him that he had no interest in, really, except for decorating the place where he was sitting. And he was around my age and looked healthy and of a nice trim weight and normal in every aspect. And I thought to myself, I'm nothing like that. I'm a compulsive overeater. I can't leisurely, involve myself in food, talk about it, or have anything to do with food except for in a more regimented way, because I have this disease and it requires treatment every day. And the treatment requires me, attending a meeting like this in the morning and having a meal plan and a higher power and making sure that I don't go off the reservation to just fritter it all away. And I'm glad of that. I'm thankful. I thank God that I'm abstinent at this moment. I pray that I'll be abstinent in the near future. Thanks for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Roy C. from New Jersey. Jen A. from Colorado, you're up. And after Jen, we'll be taking Tina and a couple of more names. I believe we'll have time.
Good morning, Barbara. Thank you so much for your service today. Great to hear you on the lines moderating. My name is Jen A., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, and exercise bulimic. I'm always denying the truth. There's solid evidence, and there's always a logical argument for me. That's the self-deception of my disease. And I'm always testing out thoughts, ideas. I'm always conducting investigations with food and exercise programs, pills and potions and all those great things. That's the experimentation. The thing is that I always continue to prove and say to myself, oh, but you're the exception to the rule, Jennifer. you can do it. You can try it. Go for it. See what happens. And if you're like me on this line today, and you're new, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. If you've tried everything and you can't make yourself a normal eater, you're a compulsive overeater. Welcome home. And I'll never forget when I finally realized, I'm like, yep, I am one of you all. I can't do it anymore. I have tried and I have tried and I have tried. Right about face. Here I go. I can do it. I can eat off a small plate. I can, do portion sizes, whatever that looks like. And I'm not talking about weighing and measure. I'm like talking about eyeballing portion sizes. But that's what I tried. And I'm so glad that you all showed me the fact that I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And it's through those two things and all the way that I experimented with food that I finally got real with myself and came to Overeaters Anonymous. And I stuck around. and I worked the steps and I'm living the steps. Today, it's not about the food. Because why? It's my mind that's always getting me in trouble. My mind always took me back to the food, which is my problem my whole life. Now, like somebody said on the line this morning, it's my emotional nature. My emotional nature is not controlled by what I eat, what I don't eat, how much I eat, you know, how I'm restricting, how I'm dieting, how I'm exercising. My emotional nature is controlled by a power greater than myself that's going to restore me back to a normal way of living, thinking, acting, and showing up in life today. And I'm so grateful that I have a dashboard, and I have indicator lights that go off that tell me, you know, like danger, danger, Will Robinson, you're getting a flat tire, you're low on oil, washer fluid is coming, you know, to a halt. And with those indicator lights on those on my dashboard, I'm able to say, oh, yeah, I need to work this through the steps. That's the solution I have today, taking it back to the steps, my sponsor, and to God. And only God can remove what's bothering me. So just grateful for this program. Thanks so much, Barbara. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jen A. from Colorado. Tina H., you're up, and then we'll be taking another list of names. Tina H., star one. All right. And I may have the name incorrectly.
Now I got it.
Oh, there you go, Tina.
Here I am. Hi, okay. Barbara. Thanks, Barbara and Team Wednesday for the meeting. And this is Tina H. calling from New Jersey. So I guess I have to thank the group because I am definitely on step one, day one. I've been sitting back listening to the meetings these last couple of weeks and, well, actually these last couple of months, and just trying to figure out, like, what is it that I'm not willing to do? Like, and I think today's meeting definitely put a big spotlight on that, because I think the truth of the matter is I'm not being honest. It's the self-deception and experimentation, because I came to Vision, it'll be almost in May of last year, and I know this works, because when I was abstinent for a couple months, the food noise lifted, the obsession lifted, and it was peaceful. And then I took my will back again, you know, and I said, oh, well, you know, I'm not really like the rest of you because I don't eat bags of this and boxes of this, you know. I'm more of the variety of, over time, I'll finish the gallon of ice cream, right? So I'm not really a compulsive overeater. But, you know, something recently happened to me over these last holidays where my husband, bless his heart, thinks I'm beautiful no matter what, and bought me a box of these delicious chocolates from a local chocolatier. And of course, you know, I said, well, I can fit this into my food plan, right? I can have two a day, and I'll take that off of my calories for the day and replace my fruit with that. And, you know, so, you know, of course, I didn't eat it all in one day, but over the course of the week, you know, I ate the whole box, right? And then I wonder, like, why the food noise comes back, why nothing changes. And it's so frustrating to me because I know this program works. I lifted the obsession for alcohol many years ago, and people around me drink. I could care less. And so I know this works. And I was on a meeting last night, and somebody said something that really resonated with me, and I was going to share it with you guys. The person says, God's will starts out hard and gets easy. My will starts out easy and gets harder. And isn't that the truth for me for these last couple of months that I've been trying to do it my way? So I'm going to try Sally O's Mother May I suggestion, and I am going to try to keep going back to I am being honest. Thank you for helping me get to step one, day one. And I hope you all have a great day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Tina H. Thank you so much. So we have time for two more shares. Let me just repeat where we are. Page 31, second paragraph, despite all we can say. Who would like those shares?
Ken W.
Ken. Anne-Marie M. And Anita J. So, and we've got plenty of time in our second hour. I'm so sorry, but can you go ahead and get us started with that? And Anita J., you'll follow.
Thank you. This is Ken W. H., recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. I'll just try to be real brief here. I just remember that in the days that I was eating, I didn't particularly care whether I stopped or not. And I didn't really care about what other people thought. I just wanted to eat. I did care about how I looked. And I would try to stuff myself into clothes that were a size smaller, 38 waist with 36 pants. Boy, that was hard and it hurt. I would try to do those things that would cover everything up. But I just ate. I just wanted to keep eating. And would lie to myself the whole way through. I'd stand on a scale and it would say 200, and I'd tell you I had 199 because I didn't want to be 200 or 230 or 240 or whatever. I just wanted to eat, and I don't remember as a kid or even early in another recovery program having a desire particularly to stop eating compulsively or eating the way I wanted to eat. I did want to look better. I wanted to listen to what others were saying about how I looked. And, you're hurting yourself. You're looking for trouble with your heart disease and everything else. And I just didn't want to hear it. I wasn't ready. And it took a long, long time till 6 years ago when I could finally embrace the truth about myself that in my entire career with OA, I had never been fully abstinent. And today, I'm finally, after coming to Vision for You for 6 years, I've been abstinent in that period. And it's a gift, and it's a glorious gift, and it's all from God. And I give thanks, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Ken W.H. And Anita J., you are up.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your service and all the shares today. Anita J., living in the recovery in Massachusetts, I got a new insight. Look at that. I got a new insight. I had always known when I first did my first fourth step, I saw that I didn't feel like other people. I always felt like I was on the outside looking in. But I never realized until recently, until today, that I feel that way about food. I live in an independent living place, and I have now arranged that 4 out of the 7 days a week, I eat with the same group, and this is my favorite group of people, and I'm lucky that this happened. But guess what? I've been watching them month after month. When it comes time for dessert, I'll have, they say, a small scoop. And they mean it. And I've watched it and watched it and watched it. And, people know that I had a little brief stint there with the with sugar-free. And anyway, the thing was, I finally saw I'm on the outside looking in with food, too. I can't have one. I just can't have one. They have these chocolate chip cookies that are humongous. This one lady, who I adore her, she has one of those last a week because every night what she has breaks off a piece with one of the chips. Are you kidding? And the thing is, I finally see it so clearly. And I don't want to think that I can't stay with these people because of how they eat normal. No, I must accept, Anita, you were born this way. You found God gave you a way out. You've been taking it. You never left. The moment I heard about OA, I never left. Doesn't mean I followed it, but I knew there was nothing else. So I'm just very grateful today for this new insight. You
who says you can't teach an old dog new tricks? Aha, and I pass.
Thank you, Anita J., and thank you to everyone who shared today. Anita closed us out. Great meeting, and so many people still want to share. Stand by, PP will be leading our next hour, so we have a whole nother hour. So please join us for that. The share ID for today, if anybody wants to re-listen to this one, is 23369. That's today's share ID. And we'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And we'll, Sally A. Sally, I'm just messing with you today. I'm so sorry. I do not mean
no, no, please. I was just kidding, honestly, Barbara. I'm ready for this. Okay.
Sally A.
in New York.
I need a vision for you.
Yes. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.